Sweden Rolls once again. Welcome back, dear listeners, to yet another, I dare not say monthly interview because it's been a year since we last did one. So you'll have to bear with us. We'll do these interviews as often as we can. But I am delighted to be back doing them, and I am even more delighted to be joined by the amazingly talented Johan Noor. Welcome so much.
Hey, thank you. Glad to be here.
Super happy to have you. We'll get into tons of questions about you and your professional work, but before we do that, could we perhaps get a little presentation of who Johan is as a person, as a citizen of the world?
As a person in this world? Yeah, that's a good question. I often ask myself the same thing. But my name is Johan, obviously, and I am 35-ish, stopped counting a while ago. And I live in Sweden with my wife and my two kids and a dog called Goblin. I've always enjoyed drawing and graphic design and stuff like that, and I've always been interested, and I've always been into role-playing games, and now I am in the wonderful position where I can combine the two. So
that's amazing.
I'm happy with that. Yeah,
that's amazing. How did you first get in contact with RPGs? What was your first contact? Do you have any anecdotes or stories from back when?
I think my origin story is pretty basic or very, very common. It's my nerdy friend when I was in school, the friend with the Warhammer miniatures and the Warhammer posters on the wall. We borrowed his big brother's copy of the original Mutant. Mm-hmm. And we at the time we had no idea how to play it, but there was a funny map and some good pictures, and we just had fun and played it, tried to figure it out as we went along, and that kind of hooked me. And I think I'm playing role-playing games pretty much the same way now, just figuring it out as I go, and just having a good time with it.
That sounds amazing. So the original Mutant was your first contact with it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The first one, and then we played the classic Swedish role playing games, Drakar och Demoner, and Cult was a big thing for us as well. Mm. And later on, Mutant Undergångens Arvtagare. It wasn't until I don't know, maybe eight years ago or something, 8-9 years ago, that I tried Dungeons & Dragons because I wanted to see what the fuss was about with this game. I played some Pathfinder because that was the only version, the only game similar to Dungeons & Dragons that I could get a hold on, and then after a while I realized, holy shit, this is too crunchy for me personally, so I got into the OSR instead, and that's where I've been staying. All right.
Yeah, so you mentioned Mutant Undergångens Arvtagare, which was the big iteration of the Mutant game in early 2000s. Could you say that? Yeah?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, after Target Games, shut down and Mutant Chronicles was gone. And was that also when you started getting into the RPG business, doing freelance work and stuff like that?
It was the first game that I did anything for. And I was at the time when Jan Ring and the company released that game, they had an internet forum, which was a thing back in the day. Mm. And I was very active there, and I posted a bunch of content for the game and illustrations and everything. And so that's how I was like picked up and got my first gig, basically. It wasn't for the game that was my first freelance job, but it was for a fanzine called Den Fjättrade Gåsen, where I did, I think it was a map or something.
All right.
And then that's where it started. But then eventually I was contacted by, I think it was Mattias Lilja from Järnringen, or if it was Jonsson, I can't remember. And someone from the guys making the game, and they asked me if I wanted to make a map. And I was like, oh, yes, of course, I want to make a map for an actual book. Mm. And that's where it started. And so, yeah, that was ages ago. I don't remember how many years ago, but yeah, the ball was rolling then. Then they quit the company, or like the company was, what do you say? Like they canceled it or something. Mm. Like, the, yeah, And when they returned again to make Simbarum, they asked me if I wanted to be a part of it and if I wanted to help them make this game. And so I became a part owner of the Jernringen. Mm-hmm. We did Simbarum. I left it and kept, you know, freelancing. And that's also how I got in contact with the other guys from Free League. And I started freelancing for them. And so I did stuff like Oktoberlandet and... what was next? I think it was like a bunch of my own adventures for OSR, and then I got in contact with Pelle Nilsson, who had made the game Barkhäxan, a Swedish horror game. And we realized that we worked very well together, and so we wanted to keep doing that. And that's when Mörkborg came into being, pretty much.
All right, yeah.
And because that has been crazy, yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine. We'll get back to that, the craziness of Mörkborg. Can you please just tell us a little bit more about, you know, meeting Pelle and, you know, finding your, like, creative soulmate, or if I dare say. such a term, you know.
It's kind of funny because during the time when we did Barkhäxan, I don't think we ever met once. Like physically, it was everything was just digitally and we talked through Messenger and he had done a bunch of very small OSR like games, and he had his Facebook page Okkult Örtmästare Games that I was a member of that group, and I remember he posted something about this Barkhäxan thing that he did. Just a vague sort of image of some birch trees and a poem, I think. And then he briefly just pitched what the game would be about. And I just felt like, holy shit, I need to be in on this. I need to be a part of this somehow. So I just reached out and I asked him, hey, can I help you do this? And we just clicked. I don't know. We had a great time working together. And I think... I look back at Barkhäxan and I'm really proud of that product. And you know, when he then later posted that he wanted to do something with Mörkborg, I just instantly reached out again and asked, "Hey, do you mind? Like, can we work again together?" Mm-hmm. So, and the idea with Mörkborg was that it was going to be just a small print on demand thing, basically. Mm. But it just snowballed and.
Yeah.
I mean, we still today work very, very well together, and we both have, I think we share the same sort of philosophy and mindset when it comes to creativity, and we're both we don't have a lot of prestige between the two of us.
That's important. You know,
Yeah. So we're very equal there, and we, you know, we just have a good time. So.
That's amazing. And you two are Stockholm Cartel, or is that something else?
It is a bit complicated, all our different logos and brands. But in short, you can say that Pelle is not part of Stockholm Cartel. His own imprint is Okkult Örtmästare Games.
All right.
But I, on the other hand, is part of this collection of artists and creators and idiots called Stockholm Cartel.
Mörkborg
is really a collaboration between Stockholm Cartel and Okkult Örtmästare Games. And
all right.
Also with Free League through their Free League workshop thing where they help us publish it. So there's a bunch of people involved in it. And that's also actually it's an important factor, an important thing about how this project is, because it's a lot of it's very collaborative, and it is a collaboration from the start, and we've kept collaborating with a bunch of people from everywhere since that day with all the other products that we've made. So it's a very there's a lot of people involved in it, more than just me and Pelle.
I see.
Yeah,
but you are the driving forces behind it. Like,
I guess. Yeah, we can't get rid of this thing now.
No,
it's forever stuck to us.
Yeah, I understand. Getting into a little bit about, because let me think. Are you the first illustrator designer that I interview? I think you might be, actually. Ooh. So actually, you might have to answer a few like very general questions about this, because I'm really interested in the like the process.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So, I again, I am guy guessing here, But as a designer, sometimes you come into a project and the game is more or less finished, and they go like, we need either illustrations or, you know, a more, you know, all over graphic design work done on this. While sometimes, which I guess I'm again guy guessing, like with Merc Boy, where you and Pelle are, and others of course, are working and collaborating and, you know, like creating everything, you know, both the rules, the setting and the design, you know, from scratch together, and, you know, you bounce thing off each other.
Yeah, it's very different actually between projects. And I think, I mean, I've done a bit of both, or all over the place, really. I mean, some projects, you basically get a text and like, here's the game, and now you just need to make a book out of it. But I can't really help but get in there and suggest edits anyway, especially when I do graphic design and I like do typography and layout and everything, because sometimes I just see things that I think can be improved, or like I see this text, I think it's a bit too long, maybe you can shorten it a paragraph or two, is that possible? Or here I need just some more words for it to look good to the eye and to, you know, fill up the page basically. So I tend to do that. And but also I think when getting like a commission to do, especially I think art but also graphic design in a way, it doesn't really matter what stage the or what state that the text is in, because I tend to like distill it to its essence anyway when I sort of visualize the vibe for it, when I try to find the tone and the concept. So even if I just have a few paragraphs of text pitching the game, that's what I need to get going and to like find the style. So even if the game is fully complete, I will do that work in myself just to compile it into this short pitch in my head. It's very strange day here, but
no, I think again. So you need for to get the essence of the game, even though you get the full game, you still want to make an elevator pitch out of it so that you can
kind of
find the essence. Is that what we were?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm. And that can be just mentally, but I need to have just the essence in a way.
Yeah, I understand completely. As a composer of music, it's more or less the same. Like I need the elevator pitch to get the tone.
The thing.
You know. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Like,
and
for,
I think
like for Twilight 2000, I did that entire soundtrack out of an elevator pitch, basically.
Oh, really? Yeah.
I didn't have the possibility to, because I composed it while they were still working so much with it, so there weren't really PDFs I could look at and stuff like that. I hadn't played any of the previous iterations.
No.
So I understand completely what you mean. You know?
But that's kind of what you'd need anyway, and that's what you want to communicate. You want to have the broad strokes, and you want to show that so that maybe the readers or the listeners in this case can fill in the blanks themselves. You only have some sort of guidance to go from. So,
and the essence has to be there in all aspects of the game as well. You know,
yes, because definitely.
Because if you focus on stuff like a bunch of details, and you don't really capture the essence of the game, the feel of the game, the core of the game, then the game's not going to be good, because the design is not going to match the game.
Exactly. And I think that's a mistake that some games do when they use a more generic design, or they don't really find that essence and that vibe. And I think as a designer, it's my job to pick up on that and amplify it in a way. So that's why I think, to me, music is very important as well there, because I tend to do like a Spotify playlist for the project just to get into the right mood for this thing. And not for every job, of course, but for larger things. And especially for we're talking Merc Boy, which is a very musical project. But
yeah, of course. Absolutely.
But yeah, that's... and when it comes to like the process, it's sometimes the writers or the designers want to be more involved in if you say you make artwork or something, they want to do little small changes, but usually I feel like I get pretty free hands, and I get to do pretty much what I want, because and it's it's also not really, I don't think my job as an if I'm an illustrator, I don't think my job is to make a picture that I personally like. First and foremost, it's what's best for the game. and for this. And the same goes with design as well. Like every design has a purpose, and that purpose is different between books or products depending on what it is. So you have to like kind of ignore what you personally want, even though it's better if you also like what you're doing. And I don't think you can do something that you don't like, but you might not be the first, you know, the primary audience for the design you're doing.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And would you say that, like, if a publisher contacts you about a product, I mean, some publishers are, you know, very creative themselves. They are, you know, RPG designers themselves, and sometimes they're not. Would you say that the people who like order the job, the clients, if they are more like creative, do they poke around more because they are creative souls? Or do they poke around less because they have a bigger understanding of that you need like creative freedom and not be, you know, like controlled in detail too much?
That's a good question. I mean, I think pretty much all the people that I've worked with have been creators themselves or designers. Mm. So it's hard to tell. But I noticed some difference between how experienced someone is when they contact me. Like if this is their first, I mean, that's pretty obvious. If it's the first time you're publishing something, you might not know exactly how to work with an illustrator or a designer. And I try to be easy to work with regardless of who you are. But I think it can be evident sometimes that the less experienced someone is, that they tend to want to control more because maybe they're worried about the end result more than someone experienced this. So I try to guide them through it and show, like, if I think that they might need it, I will send more sketches and like involve them more into it.
Yeah.
But it's always dependent on project and people that you work with. So
yeah, of course. Yeah, sending early drafts is very important, you know. Even
it can be, and I'm actually pretty lousy at that because once I start drawing, I just can't help myself, and I tend to like complete it totally. So there's been a few occasions where I've had to redraw it entirely, which is all right because obviously you should send a draft and a sketch first. But yeah. you learn for as long as you live. So
yeah. I understand. So many of the games you've worked on have gotten perhaps most praise of all for the graphic designs and illustrations. I'm talking about Symbarum. I'm talking about Mirkbori, and you know, it's I had another Oktoberlandet.
Oh yeah.
Those are three games that, like in my view, I haven't played any of those games extensively at all. I own them all, and I've looked through them a lot, but they've come to my table, you know, very few times. But reading on forums and reading on, you know, Facebook and stuff like that, I do notice that these games get praise both for being good games, of course, absolutely. I'm not saying that they don't get that praise also, but I do notice that, you know, the look of the game is something that really, really draws the eye. It's something that people focus very much on. I assume that must feel very good for you, who is one of the guys involved with, you know, making that happen. What would you say it is that you bring to the table in a project you work on? Because obviously you are very good at what you do.
I don't know. I mean, it depends on what my job is, but I think, I mean, obviously, I'm very happy to see that people like what I do, and to see that the experiments that I conduct are more or less successful, because it has always been my aim to experiment and like try to push at least my own limits and my own understanding of what an RPG book can be and what it can look like. I know not everyone loves what I do. Some think it's a bit extreme, but I think maybe I can bring an extra spice to the stew, you know, something extra. As we talked about earlier, you know, find that essence and that vibe and accentuate it or elevate it. And I think, you know, the some might argue that the game is inside the text, but I think it's also equivalent. I mean, just as much in the art and the graphic design and the whole presentation of the game and the whole. It's, to me at least, and I think to a lot of people, it's so much faster to understand an image and to be, you know, transported by something that you look on. It's like graphic design and art is like a shortcut to
imagination. it's like the old saying, like, a picture says more than 1,000 words.
Exactly.
You know.
Yeah.
Of course.
It's like it can in that sense be like a hook to draw you in to the meatier content in the book. But it's also like the whole experience of flipping through a book that's been very carefully designed and illustrated. Of course, it can draw you in and strengthen the text in it. So and also, like, depending on what the project is, I think I can help to make that text accessible and readable and understandable. So that it's easier to navigate in a book and find what you're looking for, or easier to use at the table, depending on how the text is formatted.
That is very important. You know, flipping through pages during sessions is the last thing you want to do. So if you can find that page you need with that quote you need, you know, because you know exactly where in the text is going to be, that's very important.
Yeah, and I think, you know, if especially if you do like adventure design and formatting for, say, a dungeon crawl, just understand how to best use typography and to, you know, highlight important words, or how to list things in bullet lists or whatever it may be, you know, that sort of thing, I think, is important, and why you should have a graphic designer on your team.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, but a somewhat more casual or superficial question then. Do you have any, like, rituals when you're at your table designing? Do you have a special coffee mug, or do you always go to the bathroom before, or always wear the same slippers, or, you know, something like that?
I laugh, but that's a good question, because these things can actually be very important to get into the right mindset. I think when I work on Mörkborg things, I need to listen to music. I need to listen to my Spotify, my playlist, and I usually have a beer or a strong drink, and maybe not the healthiest of rituals, but that's how I work.
You're so rock and roll, you're so rock and roll.
I mean,
that's amazing. Yeah, Anders Blix says he calls himself the machine who turns coffee into RPGs. Because he always has to drink a lot of coffee when he designs games. Yeah.
No, I tend to be slightly tipsy when I do my design, and then I
write
drunk, get it sober. It doesn't work for everyone, absolutely not. But yeah.
Oh, that's an amazing story. Okay, so a few questions that are specific for games you worked on. As we said, you started with Mutant, Heirs of Doom, Undergångens Arvtagare, and you said you did some maps for that.
Yeah. It was mostly maps, and the first map that I did was like an underground bunker structure in their Gothenburg module. And then it was a bunch of maps, basically, of adventure locations. And that was funny, because when Free League did this Hindenburg game, they asked me if I could do the city map for that this time around as well, because I did it back in the day. And that was fun to sort of like revisit that city that I did
at the beginning of my career.
Do it again.
That must have been amazing. Yeah,
that was really fun.
Good fun, yeah. And talking about maps and Free League, you went on to do the Stockholm map for Mutant Year Zero, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, actually, I did all the zone maps.
All the zone maps. Yeah. And you put a big glowing crater over your own apartment.
Yeah.
There must be a story there.
I'm not sure if there's an interesting story. I mean, I added a bunch of Easter eggs and a bunch of locations because, you know, when I made these maps, I took the real world location and I sort of drew on top of mm-hmm. it and destroyed the city as I did it. So if I stumbled upon a place where I had been or I had some personal like connection to, I would add a little extra thing there. So that glowing hole was just where I lived at the moment. I thought it was fitting to just have a bombed out crater.
Yeah.
So there are a few of those things in those maps.
It's a very fun map for someone who's grown up in Stockholm, you know, to use in your game. I played a lot of Mutant Year Zero with several groups, and, you know, it's always fun to talk with a group, you know, when we're living in Stockholm to see, like, where do we put the Ark and stuff like that. They put
and
it
I think
in
that's
so
fun.
Many weird places. It's so fun.
Yeah, I did play with some people in Linköping, and it was the same. Like, there was no official map for that city, but that's the beauty of this type of game, that it takes place in the real world, that you can take your city and you can sort of add places, you can add locations to it, and you can, you know, everyone knows what you're talking about and where you are, so.
So, moving on to Oktoberlandet, another game just published in Sweden, but it actually, despite that, has gotten some international attention anyway. Ta-da! Due to the design of the game, mostly. So, you know, it's, as I said, I haven't played it, but I own it. I know that it's based during the Russian Revolution 100 years ago, and it's steampunk, right?
Yeah, it's a made-up world, but it's inspired, it's sort of a pseudo-Russian Revolution world. So it's like, it has that sort of aesthetics and that sort of vibe to it, and that was a fun little challenge actually when we did that book together with Christian Merstam. If I said his name correctly, that we wanted it to look the part and we wanted it to look like it was from this time period. So
how do you get inspiration for them? Someone says, we're gonna do like elves and steampunk in Russia 1917. Like, okay, where do we start?
Well, I looked up a bunch of like old Russian constructivism and futurism design works and books, and it's a very characteristic and very striking graphic design, and like everyone will recognize it. It uses this, you know, it's red and black and a bunch of very extreme lines and exaggerated big typography and very experimental. So it suited me well. But I think at the time before I did that book, I didn't really like that style myself. So it was kind of hard to like get in on it and to appreciate it, but after a while I was sort of started liking it more and more, and by the end of it I really loved it. So it was actually very like I grew as a creator, I think, in a way doing that. And it was also where I got, I think, my first taste in really experimenting, you know, with typography and with graphic design in a role-playing game book, because it's very different from other books, I think. And it would be really fun to translate that one day to English, but I'm not sure if that's possible for a lot of reasons. But it's a fun book.
Yeah, and it's again, like we talked about earlier, about like making a product that, you know, has to be loved by people who love that and not maybe in your own taste. That's as we talked about earlier, if you remember. But in the end, you do have to like the product that you put out.
Yeah,
you
know,
so you grow to like it, or you.
I think I kind of skewed it in a direction that I enjoyed, and I also learned to love this aesthetic as well. Even though I think I didn't really understand it at first, but it's always a fun thing, especially with like typography, because I'm a huge typography nerd. With this book, I specifically was looking for typefaces made either by Russian foundries, so that it would be very true to the you know, to the setting and everything, but also typefaces that was like actually used in this time period, so so that would it will be more authentic, so it will be, in a way. It was also fun because there's a lot of there's a lot of photos in this book as well as part of the art, and at the time that was something that I hadn't seen that much in RPG books, so I just wanted to use that medium in a book and try to do it justice, because I think the whole RPG industry has sort of a bad standing with using photos in books. So yeah, I was trying to find those little challenges to take on, and yeah, I think it worked.
I, as I said, have flipped through it, so I definitely agree that it's, you know, it's a very interesting product, you know, design wise, and it's obviously won international attention as well, so it's
that's fun.
Yeah, so a question about working with Jan Ringen. I assume that you worked closely with Martin Griep.
Yeah, I mean, it was a pleasure working with him on Simbarum. Yeah. And it kind of, working with him is kind of like cheating as a graphic designer, because no matter what you do, like you piggyback his skill in a way, because you just put his art on a spread and it looks good and you feel good about yourself even
when
you didn't do that piece of art.
I can imagine. Yeah, what is it you think that makes his art so I don't want to use a bland word as good, like, what is it that makes his art so, like, movingly atmospheric or suggestive? Is that a word in English? Suggestive, as we say in Swedish?
I don't know
if suggestive is a word. I think so.
No, I mean, I think that particular style of, like, concept art, like, illustrations is very good at depicting just that, a mood and the broad strokes and everything. And especially when he paints with, you know, light and... He's very good at making like locations feel like a place that you can actually visit, and that's full of wonder. So, that's nice. It's it was very fun to work with him, and we did some collaborations with like what kind of art should be in Simbarum, for example, with like how we wanted the classes to be depicted on the page, that we wanted them to be without background and something like that. But most of the time, it was just him sending amazing art, and I just put him in and. Instantly the book looked good.
Yeah. So Mørkborg, of course, we talked a bit about it already. It really became a smash hit from the get-go, you know, from the very start. What doors has that game opened for you? Are you like doing a lot more freelance work internationally now, or are you mostly focusing on Stockholm Cartel and, you know, Mørkborg and Cyborg, the new game?
Yeah. It's actually everything. all of the above at the same time. So it's busy times right now. But it has absolutely opened a lot of doors internationally. And you know, since releasing Mørkborg and since it got the attention internationally, I've been doing a lot of freelance work, which is awesome. And it's fun because before, you know, doing Mørkborg, I did a lot of work for, you know, Jan Ringen and Free League and these kind of larger publishers. But now I'm getting more involved with smaller, like, more indie games and indie designers. And that's also very fun too. Like, it's very different. It's not very different, but it's a quite different thing. So it's fun to have these sort of smaller freelance projects that you can go a little bit more crazy with. But also, you know, we're still doing making Mørkborg things, and Cyborg is very much occupying all the time that I have right now. We're just finalizing the book and all the, you know, making it ready for print, and it's fun. It's going to be hell of a book, I think. And it's a very different, we're in a very different place with that one than we were with Mørkborg, because when we did Mørkborg, we had no idea how anticipated it was. You know, we knew that we had something of an audience, but we never thought it was going to be this big. But with Cyborg, we know that there's a lot of people waiting for it. And it's been, you know, it's been written about it as one of the most anticipated games of next of this year, which is a bit scary as well. But now it's fun, and it also feels like we have the community, you know, with us with this one. So
I really enjoy it. But I mean, from what I understand, you take good care of the community as well, and that's, you know, that's how you get a community that will be supportive, you know, of things that you do in the future.
I think the community is one of the most important things about this game, because that's the people who play it and who owns the game, basically.
I mean, the design is I'm sorry, I hope you don't take offense, but you know, the design is very provocative. You know, I've never seen any game quite like it, and many times when I open it, I almost like get ahead. My head just spins. Like, where should I look? Where should I read? What's on this page? You know, that its whole essence is almost as if it's designed to convey discomfort. Like, is that an idea, or is it just me who have been sleeping, like, sleep deprived, or is that, you know, was that intentional, or is it?
It's not just me? Yeah, no, it's not just you. Definitely not. But I think, I mean, the essence, as we talked a bit earlier about, it's the essence in this game is really that, you know, the world is ending, reality is falling apart and it's breaking apart. So it makes sense for the book to also break a lot of rules and to feel, you know, chaotic in a way, even though there is a pattern and there is a structure behind that chaos. But again, and it was also an experiment really from us to just push the limits as much as we could and break a lot of rules and just basically see what would happen if we did that. And I think also when making this kind of like punk scene look that has the styles all over, you invite other creators to also do the same and to feel like it doesn't have to look like a professional, you know, high-end book. It can look, you know, it can look homemade, and you can tape and glue it together and it still works. So that was also the reason. But really, Mörkborg is kind of like two books in one, because the first part that talks about the world and the setting and the game, that's the chaotic part. But the adventure is designed with a whole different mindset. That's designed to work at the table and to be usable and readable and you know, easy to reference. So you know, plus all the rules that you need are all on one page in the back of the book. But I totally understand if people find it a bit hard to read. So that's it's not a book for everyone. Absolutely not.
I mean, I absolutely adore it. I absolutely love it, and it's so interesting and impressive that, you know, you can convey that with the design, I think. And, you know, having talked with you now, I also, you know, realize, you know, your vision of, you know, a picture says more than 1,000 words, that, you know, you want to convey the setting in the design, and you definitely, you know, succeeded with that.
We wanted to make a very loud book as well.
Yeah,
it's loud. Loud. Yeah.
Do you like, apart from Cyborg, which is of course a huge thing that you're working on that's upcoming, is there anything other upcoming products that you're working on that you want to tell us about, or that you're allowed to tell us about?
There's actually, it's quite fun. I'm doing a few illustrations for Cyborg third-party licensed titles for a game that hasn't even been released yet. But there's some people making you know, modules for that game, even though they don't have it yet. But that's also a testament to how people anticipate it.
Yeah.
But
for sure. Yeah.
Not that, and then we have a few pretty cool like collaborations with Mörkborg that isn't really, it's not books, it's something else. So it's fun to reach outside of the book, you know, like we did with we did this thing Putrescence Regnant, which is a vinyl album that we did.
It's also an
RPG product, like that kind of thing. I think is what we're looking at now with more and more
It's cool to push the boundaries and, you know, try and, yeah.
Yeah, and like a lot of times just for its own sake, just, you know, maybe it's not the best idea, but we just have to try and see what happens because it's fun.
Mm. Which RPGs do you yourself most play?
Oh, barely any, unfortunately.
I realized the other day. For every designer, you know, you never have time to play games.
No, but that's the truth. It's the sad truth. There was a friend of mine complained the other day that he only played 4 times this year. I'm like, what? It's January. What are you talking about? I played twice last year.
It hurts. It hurts in my heart to hear that.
2 times, and it was only Mørkborg. But I wish.
Going back, let's say we go back 5 or 6 years then.
Okay, 5 or 6 years. It would have been some kind of light rules, minimalistic OSR game, like Into the Odd or Knave or something like that.
All right.
Where you only need a d20 and a bunch of random tables. I think.
All right. Cool. When you were playing, if you're a player, do you often like do some doodles, like some small illustrations while you're playing? Or if you're a GM, do you like illustrate some cool settings or scenes beforehand that you just like, boom, here's where you are, or this is what this NPC looked like?
Yes, a lot of that, both of it actually. I very rarely get to play. I almost always GM when I do run, but I am a notorious prepper, and I do a lot of stuff like that, a lot of handouts and a lot of, you know, because this is a very creative hobby for me and I need to create stuff. So yeah, I will do a lot like that, and also I will draw doodles when I GM. I can't not do that. So.
Yeah. Let's see now. Oh. Have you listened to Sweden Rolls?
I have. I listened to the interviews. Before this, in preparation to just see what I've got myself into.
Picking the cherries out of the cake.
I realized that I am in very good company here, so I'm very honored to be.
We're honored to have you, and I definitely would say that you definitely fit on that list. For sure, without a doubt. I mean, we've gone through your resume, so yeah.
That's fun. No, I unfortunately haven't listened to a lot else. I mean, I'm not really that into actual play podcasts, unfortunately. I know this is swearing in the church here, but
no, I'm well aware that it's not for everyone. I say that to all people, both role players and, you know, mugglers. You know, it's not for everyone. So it's you just have to be humble about that.
Exactly.
You know, that's a fact. So then my next question was going to be if you listen to any other actual play podcasts. So the answer then would be no. But do you have an opinion of the phenomenon? Because it has become quite a phenomenon recently.
I don't know. I think... Not really. I have listened to a few, and it's mostly when it's an adventure that I myself is about to run. So if I am prepping for something and I find an actual play podcast playing it, then that's pretty good as a preparation to get inspiration. So I enjoy that. Plus, I often listen to it if there's people playing stuff that I wrote.
Ego
thing to say, but it's very fun to hear
how
they tackle the different you know, stuff that you wrote. So.
Because if you did that like 15 years ago, you'd have to go to conventions and sit at someone's table for like 4 hours to find out how do other people play my game.
Yeah.
But now you have direct connection to hundreds of people playing your games, and you can find out in an instant, like, okay, how are they playing my game? And that must be very interesting.
And it's kind of like playtesting after the fact, but it's a very late playtesting, but it's very fun to hear. And because you know what's coming, and you're like, oh, I wonder how they will deal in this room, or I wonder what they will do with this character, whatever. So it's fun.
Has there been an occasion where you've listened to an actual play of a game you worked on and you just went, okay. If we take Mirkborg, for example, if you design an adventure like a year after you release a game, and something that you heard someone else do is something that you've maybe not used and maybe not changed your mind, but at least taken into account when you've created something new for that game.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I think there's so many good GMs and players out there. So when you listen to them play the game that you've done, you're like, shit, can you do it like that? That's pretty cool. I'm like, wow. Mm. Especially people, I think, who take Mirkborg, for example, they take it very seriously and they get all involved with the corpse paint and the voices and everything. And to us, it's always been more of a beer and pretzels type game.
All right, yeah.
And so that's very funny to see, it can actually be quite serious. And if you have that tone, it works as well. Even though it wouldn't fly really at my table because my players are idiots, myself included. So, but it's very fascinating to listen to.
All right. Okay, thank you so much. We're gonna finish off with a few super short answer questions. These are the same for all our guests, no matter if they're an actor in an actual play or a designer or writer or whatever. What's your favorite RPG that you yourself has not worked on?
I have to say Mausritter, because it's so small and it's brilliant and it manages to make playing mice kind of scary.
That's so awesome. Do you have a preference in genre? Fantasy, sci-fi, horror, steampunk, blah, blah, blah?
Not really. I mean, no, actually, I have to say no there because I'm very open to everything.
Yeah. Okay, good answer. Music while role-playing, yes or no?
Hell yes.
Especially Mirkborg, right?
No, but I need to have some sort of ambient music, I think. But it's always elevated and it makes it better.
I think so too. If it's a good playlist that it doesn't, take away too much focus from the game.
Yeah. Mm.
Snacks during sessions, yes or no?
Yes, and I think lately I've been leaning more towards more healthier snacks, actually, because all those bags of chips, it's not good. Yeah.
All right. Alcohol during sessions, yes or no?
Yes, if everyone is fine with it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And GM or PC? I assume this. I have to guess what I myself was meaning, but I think what's your preference, GM or PC? Gun to your head, you can only do one of them for the rest of your life. Which would you choose?
GM in a second.
All right, in a second,
yeah.
Even.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny because the few times that I've played, I realized that I haven't really enjoyed it as much. It's like, is this fun, really? Because, it's a whole different type of... It's a whole different game when you're playing to when you're GMing, I think. And I mean, I just love being a GM. So that's what I'm here for.
Okay. I think I would actually need a gun to my head to actually be able to pick because I really want both. But if the gun would come to my head, I would say GM as well, I think.
Yeah.
I need to create a story, and not all GMs are into letting players be an active part of actually creating the story. So, yeah, it will be GM. So, Johan, thank you so much for joining us. It has been a very interesting hour, and I've thoroughly enjoyed talking to you and hearing your wisdom in design and illustration. Thank you so much
for having me here.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And we hope to see you soon, when the world is a better place and all that.
Definitely. One day we'll be released from this.
One day. And thank you so much for listening. And check out our actual place. Check out our other interviews. Check us out on Patreon, because this interview that you just heard is 10-15 minutes shorter than the one that's on our Patreon page for our patrons. So if you really want more of you one right now, head on over to Patreon and join us there. Again, Johan, thank you so much. Is there any place you wanna? Is it anything you wanna plug? Is there a website, an email address, a phone number?
Now you can
throw out there.
You can find us. You can find me and us on all social media. I'm I'm probably, unfortunately, most active on Twitter, so that's where you that's where you'll find me. Mm. Otherwise, you can pre-order Cyborg now, so you can do that.
You should do that for sure. Definitely, definitely. And we'll hope to try it perhaps during a convention live show or something. Who knows?
That'd be cool.
Who knows? That would be so awesome. Thank you, Johan. Thank you for listening. And join us next time when Sweden rolls once again.